If America is ever going to turn around, one of the key areas that needs to be changed is education, including education in America's true history. Homeschooling is one of the avenues that many concerned parents are beginning to pursue. Many of our founding fathers and key American leaders, like Abraham Lincoln, were home-taught. Publius National Post writes, quote, "During the pandemic, interest in homeschooling spiked. Taya Shoemake, an experienced educator who had homeschooled her own children, was inspired to develop an online platform to help parents who were considering making the switch. She created Homeschool Ready or Not," end of quote, and she did that in order to help parents get involved in homeschooling. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now Taya Shoemake joins us. By the way, her website is homeschoolreadyornot.com. Well, Taya, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here. Thanks so much.
Sure. Why don't we step back and just have you tell us a little bit about your own background and how you got involved as a homeschool mother?
Oh, goodness. That's a great story. So I was ready to homeschool at birth when our children were born. My husband was not. So as a result, our oldest went to traditional school. And it was actually the socialization factor, and again, this is years ago, that flipped the switch for my husband to be all in for the homeschool lifestyle. We learned during a parent-teacher conference that in this class of 16, where the desks were set out 4x4s, and we loved this teacher, but she told us that they often put our oldest, who was six at the time, at the group of desks where the children misbehaved, hoping she would rub off on them. And that was concerning in a lot of ways. Number one, bad company corrupts good character. And number two, I just thought to myself, this precious firstborn box checker is probably wondering what she's done wrong, to be put at this table. So when we got in the car, my husband didn't even turn the engine. And he looked at me and said, "Do you think you'd be ready to homeschool in the fall?" And so that started our journey with homeschooling. And after that, it was me tutoring at different co-ops or within our classical community. And that eventually led to me helping local high schools implement different programs, a Latin program, for instance. And so that's really the genesis of it all.
What would you say to those who say, well, a parent is clearly not an educator. They're not qualified to fill that role. It's like, what did Terry McAuliffe say? You know, the teachers are the ones who are qualified, not the parents, to teach the kids.
Well, I would ask what those qualifications are, Jerry. I mean, seriously, what are the qualifications to teach, especially our little ones? You would need to read, you would need basic math, and you would need to show them what young ones should be doing, whether it's tying their shoe, whether it's learning to help you bake by putting different measurements in line, whether it's spinning around until you're dizzy and finding cloud puzzles or cloud pictures. What does it take to inspire that lifelong curiosity that, quite frankly, parents can model for their children? I think part of the reason one of ours loves history so much is that I'm such a history geek. And then learning it twice, right? You get to see one of the selfish things about homeschooling is that as a parent, we either learn something we didn't know or we relearn it with our adult eyes. And boy, it sheds a whole new light on things.
Oh, that's so neat. Okay, so tell us about the state of homeschooling in the country right now. In terms of, 30, 40 years ago, in some states it was not even legal. Now apparently it's legal everywhere, although there's some who would like to change that, unfortunately. But in the meantime, the statistics are amazing, especially after the COVID pandemic. There have been a lot more parents who are going down this route.
For sure. I think we are in the double digits now as far as K through 12 representation in our student population. So it has grown by leaps and bounds. And of course, I mean, the nature of the demographic means that the future is nothing but growth. It is legal in all 50 states, although some are more regulated than others. So it is a demographic that, for instance, is the Russia is actually the second largest growing homeschool demographic in Europe, because the parents in the Russian Orthodox Church have had it with their state education. And when you think about it in practical terms, I mean, there's so many practical areas of this solution. It's such a drain on the state that they have to have a top-down, one-size-fits-all solution for every wonderfully, fearfully made individual. And it's just not practical. It just isn't. We can talk about solutions for at-risk demographics. We can talk about solutions for, certain demographics. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's to have a Leviathan try to educate the masses is just not the way to go. I mean, we can have local communities. And for the record, we want all environments to thrive, public, private, homeschool. I honestly think that homeschooling is the last bastion of innovation of education in the world. I mean, in anywhere, because we teach to the child, right? And their proclivities and their learning styles and environments. So, it's growing by leaps and bounds, and I don't see it doing anything else but that. And I do know that we've been a target for quite some time. But until they get to us, we'll just have to prepare for that.
How about some comments, since you mentioned history earlier, how about some comments on history in the sense that there's a battle over history, and there are some that, in effect, want to distort history, American history, so the kids, essentially, they go away feeling like, oh, this country stinks, and it's always been bad.
Yeah, 100%. It's, if we teach children how to learn, not what to learn, but how to learn, most things will fall into place. One of the best classes I took at university was a history of Russia class. And my professor was excellent. And he and I disagreed on a few things. Now, he was much more experienced than I was, and he knew that, and he took that into consideration. And one day we got into a debate. It was heated, but it was not disrespectful. And after the class, I went up and I thanked him and I said, hey, I just really appreciate that. Was kind of fun. And I said, but, I hope it's okay that, we got a little loud. And he said, young lady, that's why you're here. You're here to look at things upside down, and you're here to challenge my ideas. And so when it comes to history, and I loved to teach history, especially to teenagers, because it just fit with their personalities. And if you approach history that, hey, we're starting clean. Okay. We're going to present this situation. We're going to look at the pros. We're going to look at the cons. We're going to look at the results, and then we're going to turn it upside down and see what would have happened otherwise. And then we're going to come up with a thesis on how it could have been better. And, there really are no other options or other explanations as to why they want to rewrite history. And it's been done to a large degree already, other than to poison minds. And that just, it's not productive. It just, it goes into the agenda of the divisiveness that's going on right now. So when we talk about history, we as parents have this wonderful opportunity to present this non-revisionist history. And there are multiple sources out there. And even if, whether we agree or disagree with them, let's have that debate, because that's why we're here. And that's what I would tell every class I taught. I want you to disagree with me. I want you to do it respectfully, but I want you to disagree with me. And if you can put forth a better thesis or a better solution, put it in writing and we'll go at it.
Well, one of the aspects of history that perturbs me, and this is not just in the last two or three decades, this would be maybe even the last seven or eight decades, is they're so often leaving God out of the American history story. So when you hear things like this, okay, this is the official truth. In In 1783, the United States and Great Britain finally agreed on the treaty that would, say, okay, the war is over. The, Great Britain, finally recognized the United States and so forth. Okay. Official treaty of peace. It's called the Treaty of Paris, 1783. And how does it begin? In the name of the most holy and undivided Trinity. What? Where does that come from? I mean, when you learn, it's like, why did the founding fathers set up chaplains in the military? Why did they do that in the legislatures? Why did they have, call for days of fasting and prayer? Why did they have an annual day of Thanksgiving and so forth? If they didn't care about God, and I think they did care about God. Now, those things can be overstated, but I think too often they're understated, and they leave out God, and it's an important omission, in my opinion.
I totally agree, and that's really why you introduce people like Thomas Paine, who, like the other agnostics or atheists of the day, recognize the need for and the value of religion, not man-made, the people sincerely held religious beliefs toward the Trinity, because their definition of liberty contained a healthy component of responsibility. And that only comes with a moral compass, right? Liberty equals really responsibility. Otherwise, you have what we have now. I get to do what I want and consequences be darned. That is not the founders' definition of liberty. They understood, again, that those who want to reap the blessings of liberty must undergo the pains to secure it, right? And that the responsibility to secure it. So I agree, and I'll tell you what else we read, in the history classes I taught, we read the Treaty of Paris, and we read that the crown recognized each individual state as its own country. We are these United States, and each individual state had the right to conduct commerce as they will. Whatever was not, in the Articles of Confederation at the time that were given to the national government, if you want to call it that, that is how the crown recognized the states after the Treaty of Paris. And that was part of the deal. And so when we say state sovereignty, that's just said as an after effect now. It's like a one-off line that people laugh at, but it wasn't, and it's not. It shouldn't be. We are sovereign states, and we come together under, as of 1789, Article 1, Section 8, when we need to or for specific purposes in that article. And then guess what? We are left as the laboratories of the Republic.
All right, we have about 1 minute left. What would you like to say about homeschooling? And, go ahead and wax eloquent.
Sure. Homeschooling, like most things that are worth it, can be challenging on a good day, but not for the reasons people think. Not for calculus or physics or any of that, but it's challenging because of the paradigm shift. We've been brainwashed in this country to think that we have to outsource absolutely everything, including the raising of and education of our children. And that, frankly, to me, is a dereliction of duty. Now, there are people that have to do it. I'm not talking about that demographic. But regardless of where we choose to put our children for their education, parents have ownership of and responsibility for that education. So again, wherever they sit, you're the boss. And those environments need to know it, and you can do it. And if you are considering the homeschool lifestyle, we're happy to help at homeschoolreadyornot.com.
Okay, and the way it works sometimes is maybe one person is really good at teaching subject X, and this other teacher is really good, or parent is really good at teaching subject Y, so maybe they share the responsibilities, that kind of thing. But again, the website is homeschoolreadyornot.com. Taya Shoemake, thank you so much for being with us. All the best.
Absolutely. You too. Take care.